Shape's mystery. If you want coffee, you know where it is. She had a pot of tea brewed. I almost asked for a cup, but to keep the morning from being too full of mystery, I stuck with coffee. So, Macro's getting a divorce? Dr. Mac Roman was dean of research and titular head of our project, though he wasn't involved in the day-to-day work. Deep, dark secret. He hasn't told anybody. My friend Nell passed it on. Nell Nye was a schoolmate who worked for the city. And they were such a lovely couple together. She laughed one ha, stabbing at the potatoes with the spatula. Was it another woman, man, robot? They don't put that on the form. They're splitting this week, though, and I have to meet with him tomorrow before we go to budget. He'll be even more distracted than usual. She divided the potatoes between two plates and brought them over. So you were out blowing up trucks? Actually, I was lying in a cage, twitching. She dismissed that with a wave. There wasn't much to it. No drivers or passengers. Two saps.
Sapients?
Sapient defense units, yeah. But that puts a pretty low threshold on sapients. They're just guns on tracks with AI routines that give them a certain degree of autonomy. Pretty effective against ground troops and conventional artillery and air support. Don't know what they were doing in our AO.
Is that a blood type?
She said over her teacup. Sorry, area of operations. I mean, one flyboy could have taken them out in a single treetop pass.
So why didn't they use a flyboy, rather than risk damaging your expensive armored carcass?
Oh, they said they wanted the cargo analyzed, which was bullshit. The only stuff besides food and ammo were some solar cells and replacement boards for field mainframes. So we know they use Mitsubishi. But if they buy anything from a Rimcor firm, we automatically get copies of the invoices, so I'm sure that was no big surprise.
So why'd they send you?
Nobody said officially, but I got a thread on my vertical jack that they were feeling out Sam, Samantha.
She's the one who, her friend,
got beaten up and raped, yeah. She didn't do too well.
Who would?
I don't know, Sam's pretty tough, but she wasn't even half there.
That would go rough on her, if she got a psychiatric discharge?
They don't like to give them, unless there's actual brain damage. They'd either find that, or put her through an Article 12. I got up to find some ketchup for my potatoes. That might not be as bad as rumor has it. Nobody in our company has gone through it.
I thought there was a congressional investigation of that. Somebody with important parents died.
Yeah, there was talk. I don't know that it got any further than talk. Article 12 has to be a wall you can't climb. Otherwise, half the mechanics in the Army would try for a psych discharge.
They don't want to make it that easy.
So I used to think. Now I think part of it is keeping a balanced force. If you made an Article 12 easy, you'd lose everyone bothered by killing. The soldier boys would wind up a berserker corps.
That's a pretty picture.
You should see what it looks like from inside. I told you about Scoville.
A few times.
Imagine him times 20,000. People like Scoville are completely disassociated from killing, especially with the soldier boys. You find them in regular armies, too, though. People for whom enemy soldiers aren't human, just counters in a game. They're ideal for some missions and disastrous for others. I had to admit, the potatoes were pretty good. I'd been living on bar food for a couple of days, cheese and fried meats with corn chips for a vegetable.
Oh, you didn't get on the cube this time?
She had her cube monitor the war channels and keep any sequences where my unit appeared.
So I was pretty sure you were having a safe, boring time.
So shall we find something exciting to do?
You go find something.
She picked up the plates and carried them to the sink.
I have to go back to the lab for half a day.
Something I could help you with?
Wouldn't speed it up, it's just some data formatting for a Jupiter project update.
She sorted the plates into the dishwasher.
Why don't you catch up on your sleep, and we'll do something tonight?
That sounded good to me. I switched the phone over in case somebody wanted to bother me on Sunday morning, and returned to her rumpled bed. The Jupiter project was the largest particle accelerator ever built, by several orders of magnitude. Particle accelerators cost money. The faster the particle, the more it costs. And the history of particle physics is at least partly a history of how important really fast particles have been to various sponsoring governments. Of course, the whole idea of money had changed with the nanoforges, and that changed the pursuit of big science. The Jupiter project was the result of several years arguing and wheedling, which resulted in the Alliance sponsoring a flight to Jupiter. The Jupiter probe dropped a programmed nanoforge into its dense atmosphere and deposited another one on the surface of Io. The two machines worked in concert, the Jupiter one sucking up deuterium for warm fusion and beaming the power to the one on Io, which manufactured elements for a particle accelerator that would ring the planet in Io's orbit and concentrate power from Jupiter's gargantuan magnetic field. Prior to the Jupiter project, the biggest supercollider had been the Johnson Ring that circled several hundred miles beneath Texas wasteland. This one would be 10,000 times as long and 100,000 times as powerful. The nanoforge actually built other nanoforges, but ones that could only be used for the purpose of making the elements of the orbiting particle accelerator. So the thing did grow at an exponential rate, the busy machines chewing up the blasted surface of Io and spitting it out into space, forming a ring of uniform elements. What used to cost money now costs time. The researchers on Earth waited while 10, 100, 1,000 elements were chucked into orbit. After 6 years, there were 5,000 of them, enough to start firing up the huge machine. Time was involved in another way, a theoretical measure. It had to do with the beginning of the universe, the beginning of time. One instant after the diaspora, once called the Big Bang, the universe was a small cloud of highly energetic particles swarming outward at close to the speed of light. An instant later, they were a different swarm, and so on, out to a whole second, 10 seconds, and so on. The more energy you pumped into a particle accelerator, the closer you could come to duplicating the conditions that obtained soon after the diaspora, the beginning of time. For more than a century, there had been a back-and-forth dialogue between the particle physicists and the cosmologists. The cosmologists would scribble their equations, trying to figure out which particles were flitting around at what time in the universe's development, and their results would suggest an experiment. So the physicists would fire up their accelerators and either verify the cosmologists' equations or send them back to the blackboard. The reverse process also happens. One thing most of us agree on is that the universe exists. People who deny that usually follow some trade other than science. So if some theoretical particle interaction would lead ultimately to the non-existence of the universe, then you can save a lot of electricity by not trying to demonstrate it. Thus it went, back and forth, up to the time of the Jupiter project. The Johnson Ring had been able to take us back to conditions that were obtained when the universe was 1/10 of a second old. By that time, it was about 4 times the size the Earth is now, having expanded from a dimensionless point at a great rate of speed.
The Jupiter project, if it worked, would take us back to a time when the universe was smaller than a pea and filled with exotic particles that no longer exist. But it would be the biggest machine ever built, by several orders of magnitude, and it was being built by automatic robots with no direct supervision. When the Jupiter group sent an order out to Io, it would get there 15 to 24 minutes later, and of course, the response would be delayed by an equal length of time. A lot can happen in 48 minutes. Twice the project had to be halted and reprogrammed. But you couldn't really halt it, not all at once, because the submachines that were making the parts that would go into orbit just kept on going for 48 minutes, plus however long it took to figure out how to reprogram them. Over the Jupiter program director's desk, there was a picture from a movie over a century old. Mickey Mouse as the Sorcerer's Apprentice, staring dumbfounded at the endless line of brainless brooms marching through the door. I slept a couple of hours and woke up suddenly in a panic sweat. I couldn't remember what I'd been dreaming about, but it left me with a fading sense of vertigo, falling. It had happened a few times before, the first day or two off duty. Some people wound up never getting any deep sleep unless they were jacked. Sleeping that way gave you total blackness, total lack of sensation or thought. Practicing up for death, but relaxing. I lay there, staring into the watery light for another half hour, and decided to stop trying. Went into the kitchen and buzzed up some coffee. Really ought to work, but I wouldn't have any papers until Tuesday, and research could wait until tomorrow morning's meeting. Catch up on the world. I'd resolutely stayed away from it in Cambridge. I turned on Amelia's desk and decrypted a thread to my news module. It humors me and puts the light stuff first. I read through 20 pages of comics and the three columns I knew to be safely immune from politics. One of them did a broad satire about Central America anyhow. Central and South America took up most of the world news section, unsurprisingly. The African front was quiet, still stunned a year after our nuking of Mandelaville, perhaps regrouping and calculating which of our cities would be next. Our little sortie wasn't even mentioned. Two platoons of soldier boys took the towns of Piedrasola and Igatimi in Uruguay and Paraguay, supposedly rebel strongholds. We did it with their government's foreknowledge and permission, of course, and there were no civilian casualties, equally, of course. Once they're dead, they're rebels. La muerte es el gran convertidor, say. Death is the great converter. That must be literally true as well as a sarcasm about our body counts. We've killed 250,000 in the Americas, and God knows how many in Africa. If I lived in either place, I'd be a rebel. There was a business-as-usual running report about the Geneva talks. The enemy is so fragmented they will never come together on terms, and I'm sure at least some of the rebel leaders are plants, puppets, ordered to keep the thing good and confused. They did actually come to agreement over nuclear weapons. Neither side would use them except in retaliation, starting now, though Ngumi still wouldn't take responsibility for Atlanta. What we really need is an agreement on agreements. If we promise something, we won't break the promise for at least 30 days. Neither side would agree to that. I turned off the machine and checked Amelia's refrigerator. No beer. Well, that was my responsibility. Some fresh air wouldn't hurt anyhow, so I locked up and pedaled toward the campus gate. The shoe sergeant in charge of security looked at my ID and made me wait while he phoned for verification. The two privates with him leaned on their weapons and smirked. Some shoes have a thing about mechanics, since we don't actually fight. Forget that we have to stay in longer and have a higher death rate. Forget that we keep them from having to do the really dangerous jobs. Of course, that's exactly